My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's Ascensus.com.
Can you be the president of a climate summit and the boss of a state oil company? Let's talk about it. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. Thanks so much for tuning in. The UN's yearly climate conference, COP, starts today in the United Arab Emirates. World leaders, businesses and campaigners are gathering to figure out how to reduce harmful carbon emissions. The BBC's climate editor, Justin Rowlett, has been looking at some of the priorities.
Already there are tantalising rumours of a deal on cutting methane emissions and on climate finance, funding from rich nations to help developing countries switch to cleaner energy and take the action needed to combat the impact of a changing climate. But expect the long-running debate over the future of fossil fuels to continue. Astonishing as it may seem, the world still hasn't officially committed to even phasing down oil and gas use, let alone phasing it out.
Justin Rowlett there. Now, the appointment of the summit's president, Sultan Al-Jaber, has been controversial because he's also the boss of Abu Dhabi's state oil company, ADNOC. He's hit back strongly at BBC reports that the UAE was planning to use the summit to sign oil deals with other governments. And in fairness, he has green credentials. He's the founder of the renewable energy group Masdar. But Alice Harrison from the campaign group Global Witness is not convinced he's a suitable president.
We have placed our trust in a man who has made millions from the burning of oil and gas and is planning on increasing that production yet more. This is not the man to be leading climate talks. We need someone who is committed to phasing down oil and gas production globally, and that is not who we've got.
Alice Harrison from Global Witness. Now, his supporters say he is committed, like Stephen Geiger, a founding director of Masdar.
If anybody wants to take a look at that early development of Masdar, that's a pretty impressive clean energy track record. That's what I think a lot of the critics are not really taking a look at and too busy focusing on simplistic optics of him being the head of an oil company. He's got one of the most extensive global track records in advancing, promoting, developing not only clean energy, but also clean energy diplomacy. Dr. Sultan's legacy is going to rely on a successful outcome.
Stephen Geiger, founding director of Masdar. Now, let's do the numbers. Shares in the UK bootmaker Dr. Martens are down 26%, an all-time low after the company said it's expecting its revenues to fall and profits to miss analyst forecasts. But more broadly, European stocks are on the rise as inflation in France and Germany slowed. Margareta Vestager is well known at the European Commission for promoting competition and shaping the bloc's digital regulation. She's currently on leave, campaigning for a new role as president of the European Investment Bank. But as European Commissioner for Competition, she's taken on tech giants like Alphabet and Amazon. So does she think governments can keep pace with the rapid development of AI?
This is really not something that you can leave to the business ethos alone. Regulation is needed. And not only because I have learned as part of the discussion when tech people meet, what is your probability that doomsday will come due to technology? The European Parliament and Council are intensively discussing the European AI Act. And in the meantime, I think it's really important that we got the G7 AI Code of Conduct, which I think works very well also with the US executive order, because it is here and now that we need to build artificial intelligence that can be trusted.
And what did she make of the OpenAI debacle?
It completely confirms that regulation is needed. When you look at the back and forth of this company, the claims that new, even more powerful AI has been developed under the radar remains to be seen if that is true. But I think it shows this is not for businesses to decide whether or not this technology should be regulated. This is for democracies to decide.
That was Margareta Vestager. Over the last few years, African music, especially Afrobeats, has gained global popularity. And Mudundo, a music service based in Kenya, is riding this wave. It's aiming to double its 25 million monthly users in the next 18 months. Chief Executive Martin Mueller-Nielsen told me all about the business.
A lot of the local music that is being produced and created across Africa is not available on a lot of global services and not even controlled by record labels the same way that a lot of international content is. So the main growth driver for us has actually been that we've created a system that allows local rights holders to easily manage and distribute their catalog through our service and in that way reach the local audience.
That's one of your unique features, is that your commitment to supporting African artists. How do you make sure that they get on the platform? Do you entice them, and how does that work on the ground?
We pay royalties. That obviously is a massive part of being on the service. We also provide the artists with data on consumption of the music, which songs are performing well, and we allow them to connect to their fans through our platform. So our model is primarily mobile web-based. A lot of the music is downloaded instead of streamed. The reason for that is that we do still see that the internet costs are still quite high, and the bandwidth and the devices that majority of the population across Africa is connecting with is still quite basic. We do see extreme growth in phone penetration, so it is growing extremely fast. But if you compare that to elsewhere in the world, it's still quite little, considering that we have a population of 1.2 billion across sub-Saharan Africa.
And how do you think that you're going to make money? Do you need to introduce new features? Is it just the fact that you're going to increase your user base?
So we have seen a massive growth in our revenue from paying users in the last couple of years. And that is the route to profitability that we see, by both growing our user base to ensure that we have our future footprint in the continent, and then as well see more and more of that revenue coming from paying subscribers, similarly to what we've seen with many of the global services. That has been the sort of trigger to start moving into profitability.
Do you ever get worried about competitors like the likes of Spotify coming in and really putting a lot more investment into Africa?
So we actually see that it's a lot easier to convert someone to jump from a competing service into our service than it is to get people to go from illegal services into legal services altogether. So from that point of view, it's not something that keeps me up at night. I think what is really exciting is that we are seeing this massive shift within both the African continent and within African music. It's getting a lot of global attention. And with that global attention, of course, also comes a competition. But what we are seeing is that the investment that competition is doing into the market is actually helping grow the market quite significantly. And that's for our benefit as well.
Well, Martin Nielsen, Chief Executive of Mudundo, thank you so much for your time. And thanks for joining us in Marketplace.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. Our producer today was James Graham, and I'm Leanna Byrne. Have a great day, and thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.